I don't think I need to tell you why we're playing that song. Title song from the 1968 musical Hair, a number one hit for the Cowsills, who a band that's broken up and reformed and broken up and reformed, and they're touring again. We're talking with Dr. Melba Ketchum about her groundbreaking DNA research, looking for some answers and common ground connections between humans and Sasquatch. And it actually goes a little bit further. You ever read about the red-headed giants, this race of really tall humanoid beings that purportedly lived here in North America and maybe elsewhere in the world? Where she's digging into that mystery as well. We'll get into that and a lot more coming up on Coast to Coast AM. My guest, Dr. Melba Ketchum. Melba, I have to tell you that I touched on this briefly before in the first hour, but the Bigfoot hoaxes that have been so prominent in the last couple of years, this guy who keeps trotting out the dead body and taking it on tour and people who claim they've killed it, and those things have gotten so much attention on purpose. I mean, these guys want media attention. They're out to make a buck, and then they're discredited inevitably, and you know, the guys with the wooden coat or whatever the heck it was they were trying to pass off as Bigfoot. And then people in my line of work, media people, regard all of it as phony. I mean, it has done, I can't imagine the amount of damage it's done to the general topic. You must feel it more than anybody.
Oh, I do. Absolutely. And that's very true. In fact, that's where that possum statement came from that reporter, was because that was the 2008 hoax. Some of the DNA was found to come from possum entrails. So, you know, that's why he said that, for more effect. Let's just really destroy the study.
Well, I mean, there's just, you know, it's a free country. People can say whatever they want, but it seems like there's no dialing that back. It's hard to recover from it.
No, there isn't. That's why I've moved on and you know, I've started other things I'm doing and you know, both in science and just for my own pleasure.
Is there anything, before we move on to the next topic, is there anything else you can do with the initial research that you did? I mean, is there, can you take another shot at getting it published? Can you rewrite it in a smaller form?
Right now, like I said, if they will be brave enough, I have some well-published academic scientists that are going through all three whole genomes. And they're doing it right. One of the scientists even came out, and we took them out to a habituation site, and they had some pretty interesting things happen. So they know there's something out there. They also know that, you know, the paper is legitimate. But what they're doing is going in and rechecking everything. And this is what I've wanted all along. But the thing is, they're scared. And I hope that they'll be brave enough to, you know, to go ahead and stick their necks out, because, you know, I mean, I know what they'll find. I mean, I know the genomes are good. No reason to believe otherwise. So it's just a matter of if they'll be brave enough to stick their necks out.
Here's the risk, Melba. You mentioned the habituation site, meaning you've had encounters. You've had your own encounters.
We have three sites now, and I have, you know, others I can go to, but we have three that are just what we call our sites. And, you know, there's activity there every day if you want to be there.
Do you film them?
No. No. They don't want to be filmed. They don't like it. They will do whatever it takes to avoid it. If you want to kill your activity off, you know, very few people can. I mean, I've got video. I won't release it. I mean, because all it'll do is get torn down like the rest of everything. But, you know, you can get it, but there's ways to get it. And, you know, frankly, I just enjoy learning more about them. And you're going to learn more if you just go out there not by yourself, but, I mean, I don't ever want anybody going out in the woods by themselves, because there are bad ones out there, too. But if you just go out there without electronics, you'll get a lot more interaction.
You said in the first hour, they're people, quote. You do know that saying a definitive statement like that, it puts your reputation at risk. I guess at this point,
already,
what the heck?
It's already been at risk. So, I mean, that's what the paper showed. That's hard science. They are maternally from human beings, just like you and I. And therefore, they have a lot of attributes that are human. I mean, anybody who's seen one up close will tell you their faces, there's very few that don't say their faces look human. Those that say they don't look human probably didn't get a very good look. because anybody who has seen a face up close is going to know that their facial features are indeed quite human. They'll have a pronounced brow ridge, but they'll have a nose like ours. Their upper lips are a little longer than ours, and their forehead will recede. Not all of them have the domed heads, the cone heads. Some of them are round-headed. Others do have the pointed heads. So, you know, and there's an individual as human beings, all different shapes, sizes, colors. I mean, you name it, they're just like we are in so many ways.
Why don't we have a body? Why don't we have remains? Why don't we have game camera footage?
Because they can sense electronics. They know when you have them. They absolutely can avoid them. And not only that, but there are some bodies, but according to a government person I talked to, they're buried under the Smithsonian, never to be seen again. And I know this for a fact because I was in contact with somebody that had to do with a wildfire, and they found a mother and child dead from the wildfire. And they called and wanted us to, you know, have DNA from the bodies and all and document the bodies. And another one of the workers found them and alerted the authorities, and they came in and took it, and they suspended the man for months for not coming right to them with it so they could take the bodies.
Why would that be covered up? I mean, I would think people, I don't think people would freak out about that like they would about space aliens or something. It would seem to be an amazing thing that would be awe and wonder as opposed to fear.
Yeah, think about this, though. You know, some of the things they do, like looking in your windows and tapping on your houses, and as well as just the fact that you get the creepy feeling when you walk out there that you feel someone's watching you, I mean, that could pretty well kill the National Park Service in a lot of ways. Plus, you're going to have people that think they're animals that are going to come in like PETA and say, oh, we need to give them habitat. They don't need habitat. They live right under our noses as it is. And like I said on the show before, they're like a super stealthy, you know, Special Forces soldiers. You could probably walk within 10 feet of him and never know he's there.
I'm amazed somebody hasn't shot one, though. Some guy who,
no, they have been shot. They have been. It's just that one way or the other, something has happened to stop it from getting publicized. And that I'm sure of.
Let's talk for a few minutes about the new direction of your research. You know, I've read about redheaded giants. I've read about redheaded giants here in Nevada. Native Americans have written about them and talked about them for a long time, for generations. And what are you trying to do?
Okay, we have samples from a museum there in Nevada that from two different specimens of the redheaded giants. We're trying to get funding to get whole genomes on these, because that will answer a myriad of questions. One, it'll prove whether or not they're actually a Native American tribe, because nearly every tribe in North America has stories about these redheaded giants. Some of them claim they're Bigfoots. Others claim they're just another tribe. But this way we'll know once and for all. If they're a tribe, they need to be, you know, reburied. If they're not a tribe, then they need to be put out there as whatever they are, whether the DNA matches our Bigfoot specimens or whether it's something that's novel. And, you know, we also have samples from the conehead mummies from Peru. Once again, they have a larger brain case than us. It wouldn't happen that way with binding. It wouldn't enlarge the brain case. They have foramina in their skulls. They have, as a medical person, I can tell you their skull morphology is not the same as a human skull. And it's not from being bound. I mean, I have DNA from a baby, for crying out loud, with a big cone head. You know, we need to get those tested. I know Dave Pilates will be, you know, joining us in a second. He's got a great big bone that we've got DNA extracted from. I probably am sitting on the biggest cache of unknown DNA samples that there is. But, you know, like I say, I'm now the plague, so it's hard to get funding to test these. And, you know, at this point, it won't be expensive like the first round because we learned. All you do is you just go in with the new cost on the whole genomes and just get whole genomes on all of them, and then you know exactly where they are because that gives you the mitochondrial DNA as well as the nuclear DNA when you do a whole genome.
You were saying, is this, you'd have to do it under assumed names to get blind testing done? You'd have to be sort of slip it into a lab somewhere?
Yep, absolutely. But that's okay. I know how to do it. I've already got arrangements to do it.
So how's the fundraising going?
Slow.
Yeah.
But, you know, once again, it's just on, you know, on one of those crowdfunding things. If anybody's interested, they can go to SasquatchGenomeProject.org, and on the home page it says Fund the Genome Project. You can go there if you want to donate. We give some really cool T-shirts if you donate $100, which shows the logo with the DNA surrounding the Bigfoot. But regardless of that, we just want to know what they are. And, you know, I've been sitting on these samples for a long time because when I did the project, I told people that we were going to do the high-yield samples first, and then we would do the bone samples. Well, now we have the bone samples extracted and ready to go, and we want to get those done. We have hybrid samples, allegedly, and, you know, we have a number of different samples that could very well, you know, not only support our primary paper, but also we'll take a step further, and we'll know once and for all these strange things, whether or not they're actually anything strange about them, or are they just another type of person? And
well,
I think that's something that needs to be addressed. I think it's just as important as Neanderthal and Denisovans.
It's sort of like what science is supposed to do, right? You're not going into it with a preconceived notion. You've heard the stories. There are some samples, red-headed giants, for example. The stories here in Nevada among indigenous peoples are pretty specific. I think the red-headed giants were wiped out in a battle that they've written about in northern or southern Paiute tribes for generations. And you are just trying to get to the bottom of it. You're going to follow the evidence wherever it leads.
That's right, because we, you know, there's so much unknown in this world, and scientists really, you know, they're having a closed mind to it, and that's sad because we need to discover these unknown samples and see where they fit within our family tree. You know, are they hybrids with us, or are they, you know, just another type of modern human? You know, we won't know this until we get the test, but there's you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, just like with that little tiny skeleton I mentioned that was only, what, 6 or 8 inches tall? And it was several years old, and, you know, it's been very quiet, but it, you know, that needed to be done, and it turned out to be really interesting with the results. So, you know, I'm wanting to get these samples done. I don't want to just sit on them for another number of years.
I've heard these, and we've talked about these reports on Coast to Coast a couple of times about Dog Man, and I know it sounds ridiculous. Humanoid type.
Common.
Yeah, it turns out that it is pretty common. Are you looking into that? Because I know one of the criticisms was that maybe someone had sent you Dogman samples instead of Bigfoot samples, and they kind of got mixed up.
I think we've got a couple of Dogman samples. I do. But, you know, once again, it'll take more research to, you know, actually delve further into that. I know that somebody you know submitted a sample that gave some very interesting DNA results, and I'd love to get a whole genome on that one. And you know the sample I'm talking about.
I think I do. I guess there's a fear at some point. Is there such a thing as getting too far out there now, Melba?
I'm already out there as far as I can get. I think. I mean, you know, it's ruined my forensics career for sure, and so, you know, I don't have anything to lose at this point. So why not? Just let's just get to the bottom of all this and see what all happens. I mean, you know, and it's not like it hasn't been historically on record. I mean, you can go back to the Sumerian text and the Epic of Gilgamesh to see, you know, the first Bigfoot creature talked about. And, you know, all of the major religions of the ancient world had these human hybrid species running around, and they worshiped them as gods. And, you know, it's I mean, a few of these have survived, apparently, and, you know, it's very interesting to me to see the history of it. Did you know that there's a Bigfoot that's carved on the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris?
No, I had
yes,
no idea.
Yes, there is. They call them wild men, but it's a Bigfoot, and it's obvious. And the same with, you know, there's all kinds of tapestries. It was especially popular around the 1500s. There, you know, we put some of the pictures in the paper, which you can see the little picture we put in our paper on our Sasquatch Genome Project website. But, you know, it shows men battling with them, but some of them also show them with religious art. Like, we have one picture that's not in the paper, but we have it, that where it shows Mary and the Holy Trinity and surrounded by a family of Sasquatch. Now, you know, go figure. I mean, this has been all through history. They're on cave walls. Native Americans have drawn pictures of them in cave dwellings all over. The petroglyphs show Bigfoots here in the United States. So, I mean, it's not like they haven't been around forever.
And all over the world, not just here. I mean, it's
different names. I mean, you know, you have it from, I mean, I think every continent has had it. And, you know, they call them different things, like Australia's the Yowies. But what's interesting to me is, you know, with my network, I find out that a lot of the behaviors that they have here in North America are found throughout the world. So it's not like they're that different anywhere in the world.
There was a big flap not that long ago in Russia that Russian scientists were trying to do their own. I think it was a DNA study. Do you know anything about that?
Well, the one DNA study, you know, it didn't pan out. But I've had Russian samples that did. I mean, they weren't put in the paper because the paper was a North American paper. But, you know, we've got Russian samples. And, you know, they're just as real as everything else.
You've been writing about...
They're basically the same as what we got here.
You've been writing about it. I mean, not only the paper that we're talking about and things online, but you've been writing about it in sort of novel form. Is that the only way?
I started. It's kind of funny how that came about. I keep memoirs of all the interesting interactions I've had with them and the things I've learned and what have you. And I started writing a book about it. I mean, a nonfiction book. And I went back and I just decided about 25,000 words in, I'd go back and read the thing. And when I did, I realized that I'd probably, you know, be thought of as completely insane and decided that it would be safer to put it into a fantasy novel and therefore let people decide what's real and what's not. That way they can't say, oh, you're crazy. because some of it is fantasy and some of it's real.
What are the books? It's more than one, right?
I've finished the second one. It's not quite out yet. It's being edited. But the first one, Mystic Forest Wishes. And I also did this so that mainstream society would like the book, too. I did it in a genre for young adults, kind of like Harry Potter or Narnia or Twilight. And, of course, I took some liberties with the characters for obvious reasons. But a lot of what's in there is things that I've learned from habituators or I've experienced myself. And it's a pretty good primer for real serious interaction with Bigfoot.
Can you give me an idea about, I don't want to dwell too much on money issues, but can you tell me about the cost of a DNA test? And, I guess there's several different projects that you've got sort of on the back burner. You'd like to move to the front burner. It's not as expensive as the first time around, but what kind of money are you talking about?
Well, you know, when we first priced whole genomes, they were at least $20,000 a piece, and then we got them down to like $13,000. Then they went to $7,000. Then they went to $5,000. And now, depending on where you go, and if you can get them to do it, it's they're going down as much as to just a couple of thousand dollars, which is pretty amazing.
Do you have to do more than one test per sample?
I'm sorry?
Do you have to do more than one test per sample? I mean, you've got a sample.
No, it's just one test. It's just the whole genome. It gets the mito. It gets the nuclear DNA. It gets everything. One test, you're done. Good and clean.
I mean, because the fact is that DNA testing is so much more common now than it was just even a couple of years ago that the cost has come down.
Yes, tremendously. And the more samples I do, the cheaper it is. So, like I say, I mean, for one sample, we're probably, looking at about $4,000. But I get more than that done, then it starts going down. So, I mean, for the price of a nice car, we could run a bunch of samples, and that's a good thing. We want to get a bunch of samples run. I want to finish out all these samples I've got left over that could really be mind-blowing.
And the thing is, as the cost has come down and the testing becomes more common, the results are more reliable, I would think, which I guess your critics are not going to be happy about that.
New technology, one run through will give you better than 30x coverage, which is, I know, science lingo, but it gives you, good coverage of the genome. So, it's absolute. And plus you can use samples that are very old now. They've learned new technologies for getting these very old fossilized samples to work. And so this is going to help us as far as our bone samples, because some of them are very old.
All right. Dr. Melba Ketchum is my guest. We have one segment remaining. Going to open up the phone lines. I know who our first caller is going to be, Dave Politis. And we're going to get to as many of your calls as we can. Crosby, Stills, Nash, take us into the break. That's Night Ranger from Is This Possible? From 1984. That song is 30 years old. Sister Christian, a prototypical power ballad from the 80s. We're talking with Dr. Melba Ketchum about her research into Sasquatch DNA. I know a lot of you have questions and comments and you want to join in the conversation. We're going to go to the phone lines, and our first caller is going to be a guy we know well on this program who introduced me to Dr. Ketchum. His name is Dave Politis, and we'll get right to it in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. My guest, Dr. Melba Ketchum. We go into the phone lines now on a wildcard line, Dave Politis, who knows both of us. Dave, thanks for calling in.
Hey, my pleasure. I'm glad to hear Melba on your show, George, and thanks for taking this. I wanted to offer the audience a little bit of a perspective on what they may hear or what they may read out there about the paper. And as one of several people that staunchly defended Melba's work and the work of the other PhDs on this paper, one thing that we have commonly found, in fact, probably 99% of the time, is when we call a reporter or we talk to somebody who's written an article or vocalize some negativity towards it, 99% of the time, they never read the paper. And they make statements that, the samples are contaminated. And I said, well, have you looked at the Q scores? Well, what are those? And when you start getting down to the nitty-gritty, these people are hearing things from others that are equally uninformed or choose not to read it. And the ones that have read it either don't understand it or don't want to discuss it. And I've yet, out of probably 200 conversations in the last couple of years about the paper, myself and Scott Carpenter, who also works with me on this, we have yet to ever meet anybody that had a cogent argument about the paper and its results. And in a lot of ways, I feel sorry that Melba's gotten into this fire line, and we've stepped in many times to pick up the heat and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, if you're going to attack somebody like that, then do it with some credibility and some ammo that works. And a lot of people say, well, you know, this was a directed study, and you knew what you wanted from the beginning, and that's so totally not true. For us, we got into this with no dog in the fight. If it turned out to be on the monkey side of the fence, so be it. But one of the things I found early on was in the 1930s and 40s, there were articles in the Oregonian newspaper about a group of Native Americans having a press conference and telling the reporters that these were not animals, these were people. They had a language, they traded with them, blah, blah, blah. Yet every older researcher in the Bigfoot world chooses to ignore these things and continue to bang the drum that it's an ape or a gorilla. And in our research, overwhelmingly, the Native Americans, the First Nations people, all say it's a human.
It's like the reporters. I can see them being lazy in dismissing it, as some quaint Native American legend or lore. But there's no excuse for the scientists to look at Melba's research and not read it and declare it invalid. Melba, any comment on what Dave had to say?
Oh, yeah, he's absolutely right about that. I mean, nobody has really come up with any valid criticism of the science. They just make wild accusations. And those that claim to have scientific proof against the paper are not qualified and haven't used the proper tools to which, you know, do it. Whereas we have a lot of background scientists behind us that are too chicken to come forward that have tested out our theory. Now, Dr. David Swenson, a PhD who was the first person to assemble the Staph aureus genome, he openly supports the paper. He actually took the sequences and worked with them himself, and, you know, he was satisfied that everything we said in the paper was correct. And like I say, there's a myriad of others behind him that just are afraid to come out. And, you know, and I understand that. I mean, I don't criticize them for it because, I mean, if I had known the degree to which this would have happened, I wouldn't have done it. And like Dave also said about not having a dog in the hunt, I didn't even believe in these things when this started at all. Zero. I thought this was a farce, but, you know, if they wanted to test them, we'd do it. I mean, we'd been testing it for years with not any interesting results, so we thought this was just going to be another rabbit trail.
Dave, we've been talking about hoaxing and nastiness in the Bigfoot community. Is there still an effort to collect samples, and can you trust them?
So I think it depends who your source is. Obviously, some people that work with us, Scott Carpenter and others, they've turned in multiple samples that have all turned out to be good. And if you go back to that same area and you work it the same way we've worked it in the past, I'm sure that we could. The reality of it is, George, is that how many samples are going to be enough to some of these people?
Yeah.
I mean, 100 plus. And that's not enough.
Well, I mean,
see,
where
that's
is...
why we're trying to work with these bone samples. And I'll point out that Dave has a large bone that we want to get a genome on also. I mean, the thing is, it looks to be a human bone, but it's giant. And, if it, you know, hopefully we've been able to achieve, you know, retrieve enough DNA to actually get a genome on this thing. And, you know, that, you know, they say, oh, they yell type specimen, type specimen. Well, I mean, you know, we had some type specimens. The hair is a type specimen of sorts, but they want more. So we have more. We have teeth. We have this long bone from Dave. We have, you know, all these different DNA samples that we want to get done, you know, and that will give a type specimen if any of them turn out to actually be a Bigfoot.
Dave, anything to say about this bone sample, or is it too early?
You know, it's been around for a long time. It's just been one of those things that they never got around to testing. But just one more thing to add is, you know, George, you've had people on your show, and George Norrie's had people on his show, too, that were reporters. And some of these people I've seen at conferences, and they will not even approach me because I've took them on, or their people that hired them took them on to say, hey, show me the justification for what these people wrote. And they go and they cower in the corner, and they won't even back up their own work. And that's one of the things that's so disturbing, because some of their articles are believed outright by some.
Dave, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. I'll have to get you back on the show to talk about some other larger topics.
Anytime, George. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in. Kathleen in Oregon. Hi, Kathleen. You're on with Dr. Melba Ketchum.
Hi, George. I want to thank you, first of all, for having Melba on. They are a people. I'm a transmedium shamanic practitioner. I have a professional practice, and I have a question for Melba. Melba, what kind of mystical telepathic experiences have you had personally with the Sasquatch?
I'm not talking about me tonight, but I will tell you this, that there have been enough. I have had a lot of people contact me that claim to have this happen, credible people. People that don't know each other, people that are like Native Americans that they may not even have a computer or know anything about anybody, and yet they all tell me the same thing. They even tell me some of the same things they've been told. And there's a little, you know, I've kind of made that a hobby on the side is to do blind studies where I'll have more than one person tell me something, and I'll catalog it and see how many people I get that tell me the same thing that don't know each other and don't even maybe even live in this country.
Kathleen, have you had some kind of communication?
Yes, I do. I actually have a professional practice, but I do it, George, as a trance medium. I've been blessed to be able to connect with the spirit of the Sasquatch people for over 10 years now. I do have personal, you know, physical experience with them also, but the main focus of my practice is the telepathic connection with them, and they definitely are a people. They're very highly evolved, and they have lots to teach us.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. There's lots to be learned.
Kathleen, thanks for calling in. We'll have to have you come back and share some stories with us another time. Thank you.
I'd be happy to, George. Thank you.
All righty. On our international line, John in Toronto, Canada. Hi, John. You're on with Dr. Melba Ketchum.
Hey, George. Hey,
howdy.
George. And
howdy.
Mrs. Ketchum, I'm a little blown away with this show here because I have so many questions, but I'll cut it short.
Well, if you have questions, you can email us at our Sasquatch Genome Project website, and we'll get answers, or try to.
Right. But my question is that you had stated that you had an area that you can go to, and you frequently run into these yetis or whatever you want to call them. But my question is how do these Wookiees or whatever, this Chewbacca... How do they even know what electronics are?
They can sense them. They're very intuitive, just like an animal will know. I've got proof of this just on my own farm animals. I put out a game cam. They went right to it and were sticking their noses there, and there was no reason for them to go investigate that game cam. And, you know, so, I mean, animals, and, you know, these are much higher than an animal because they're part human. They can definitely sense electronics. There's no doubt about it. I don't know all of their faculties they use to sense them, but they know they're there. They know cameras
are
there.
But all the cameras that capture them.
There's more to the story than that I won't go into at this time.
All the cameras that capture them, they're always blurry images. They're never crystal clear or anything like that.
That's right.
And, oh, well.
It's a game.
Thanks, John. Thanks for characterizing it as a Chewbacca or Wookiee, too. I can tell you're really serious about this. East of the Rockies, John in Ohio. Hi, I hope you're more serious than that, John.
Hi, hi, George, and hi, Dr. Ketchum. I wanted to thank Dr. Ketchum for her research, but I also wanted to try and explain why she's encountering what she is encountering. I was going to explain to you why I put foot powder in my work shoes, but it sounds like she's got plenty of DNA, so she doesn't need any more DNA to go on. But I believe she is caught in a struggle between the scientific and religious community. About 12 hours ago, there was a gentleman that made a very compelling case for why the Grand Canyon is not millions of years old, but was rather made, you know, rather quickly. And I really believe that she's encountering a struggle between the religious and scientific community. And she mentioned that part of the DNA on the mother's side is human. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's 100% human. The mitochondrial DNA is.
But the other side
is unknown.
You're not sure of.
No, we're not.
I really believe, yeah, I believe it's possible. What do you think about the possibility that maybe you're looking at the DNA of a fallen angel?
Well, you know, that's one of the theories out there. There are several theories. Some say they're alien hybrids. Some say they're angel hybrids. You know, others just say they don't exist. And yet others, you know, try to say they're apes when the DNA clearly shows that they're not. But, I mean, you know, that's a possibility no one can rule out. I mean, face it, you know, like I mentioned earlier, all of the ancient religions had these type of creatures, and you know, you can read all types of historical documents that basically refer to them as, quote, gods and demigods, which means they had special capabilities and were, you know, such that they were, in the Bible at least, you know, fallen angels. I mean, you know, I can't discount it. I mean, you know, I'm a Christian. I would be very much a hypocrite if I just completely discounted that. But, you know, nobody knows for sure. You know, we all have our own opinions, and you know, I won't go there, you know, as far as just an outspoken opinion, but I'm not saying no to anything except the ape theory and that they don't exist theory. Those two are completely wrong. I know that because they exist, absolutely.
John, thanks for the call.
I mean, they could just be something as simple as another Denisovan individual that's just unknown yet that's hybridized with humans. So we don't know, but we can't discount any of this at this point. It's still in the learning stage.
John, thank you for the call. We're going west of the Rockies. Joan in California. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Thank you so much for this show. Hi. I had a question. As someone who is from a lineage of people from North America with a whole different point of view about the history of this land and all the, you know, hidden, covered-up information about who first people are.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the middle of that right now for sure. Go ahead.
Yes, and I can appreciate your stepping out, even though you've become an outcast, but that's just kind of how it is, right?
Yeah,
but I wanted to ask you what, because this is, you know, very much in alignment with, you know, what we understand about the hidden history of our ancestors and progenitors. And I was wondering, can you expound a little more on what Native Americans, indigenous, are telling you about these progenitors, basically, these humans, just specifically as creators of the human race, and just any stories about their consciousness and their history, how long they've been in their creation stories?
Well, they've been in their creation stories as long as they've had creation stories, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And some of them are even in the various native, like the sacred seven grandfathers. The truth symbol is the Bigfoot, or the Sasquatch, or whatever you want to call it, the giant. Giant of the forest. The one thing that's very common, though, is they all embrace the spirituality of the beast. And, you know, it's not really a beast, it's a person. And they say that they are a type of tribe, they're a type of person. They say they're supernatural, they're part spirit. They, you know, embrace all the supernatural capabilities. And what's interesting is I have habituators that are not Native American that say the exact same things. that they have no idea what the Native American legends say. And there's quite a few hybridizations that have occurred between Native Americans and the Sasquatch. And, you know, they're still lineages today. They're just very protective of their DNA, and I don't blame them. So, I mean, they embrace every essence of what I call a habituator, except they live it. And, you know, they don't get out there and talk about it because, you know, one, their stories are secret and passed down, and you should know that. So you don't go into a lot of it without, you know, permission from the tribe and discussing it. But one thing is for certain, they very definitely think of them as a type of spirit person. And they do interact, and they have even mated with them, like I say. And to me, that's very fascinating. And as far as this is also something I'm concurrently trying to do, not only with the Bigfoot research, but with the Native American research, is that right now we're working on a Slahal story, which is a creation story for some of the tribes of the Pacific Northwest, especially the Snoqualmie tribe. They have found mastodon bones that have been carved into these stick games, which ties the DNA along with the stick game to 12,000 years ago. And we've got sites now up to 50,000 years ago. And we're, you know, working to see if we can't prove the claims that the Native Americans say they have been here always, basically, which means that they were the first people, for sure, on this land. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it all ties together, because I really believe there's a connection between all of it. And I really believe also that their stories about the Bigfoots, I mean, they traded with them. They dealt with them. Most of the tribes find them as good. There's a few tribes that find them that think they're evil. I think that has to do with whatever clan you're dealing with, because there are bad ones out there, but there's also good ones. And just like people, I mean, they have the bad ones and the good ones. There's good people, there's bad people. So, I'm sorry.
Joan, thank you for the call. We're going to run out of time here, Melba. I guess you have the potential to rewrite a whole heck of a lot of history, human history and archaeology, and upset a lot of apple carts here.
That's true. Very true. Just have to have the funding to do it.
Well, we've got the links we've set up on our website. I hope you'll keep us in the loop. I hope people will check out your work, the website, Facebook pages, and consider whether or not to support you. And I hope you'll keep us informed of where the research leads.
I will, and I want to thank everybody that's been posting on my Facebook pages and liking my Facebook pages that, you know, have been kind during this interview, and so long to those that I've blocked.
Well, I mean, it's tough stuff. I mean, it's tough to swallow. It's a lot to swallow anyway, and I can see why people.
We didn't even scratch the surface.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Melba, we'll make sure we have you come back.
That sounds good.
All right, thanks. Lon Strickler is a paranormal and spiritual researcher. You might know him if you've read the Phantoms and Monsters Strange Encounters blog site. He also works with something called Spirit Rescue International. He's a psychic, and if we want to continue our conversation about Bigfoot, Lon has had his own Bigfoot encounter that he will share with us in a moment. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM right after this. Thanks to Melba Ketchum for coming on and joining us for the first 2 hours. We'll be right back.